and welcome to yet another edition of the History Quine podcast with me, Fiona Jane Brown. We're back in the Shire for this week's podcast and two stories from Crimond. We start off with one about the Kirk and its very, very famous clock. This one was previously published in my book, Hidden Aberdeenshire, The Coast, which, if you're really interested, you can still buy on Amazon or in local bookshops once they open again. So here we have it, the hour's coming, Crimond Kirk and its curious clock. Eagle-eyed visitors might notice something very odd about Crimond's Kirk clock. Between the 11 and the 12, there are 6 strokes instead of 5, giving the village its own personal time zone. The church was built in 1812 and is more famous for its association with the tune to the 23rd Psalm, written by daughter of the manse Jessie Seymour Irvine. Her father, Reverend Alexander Irvine, served as a minister from 1855 to his death in 1884. The clock originally belonged to Haddo, a 17th century mansion house associated with the Mains of Rattray farm estate. Now, obviously, that's not Haddo of the Gardens. This is a different Haddo. Haddo may have been constructed for William Watson, Bailey of Rattray, in the 1670s. And indeed, the name Haddo is actually quite popular in these parts, being a corruption of the farm measurement, a half davach. So, Dr. James Leng, the owner of Haddo in the early 19th century, spent time abroad as one of 2 British medical practitioners in Dominica. His colleague, Dr. James Clark, caused a furore by taking a native Dominican woman as his wife. Despite his time being spent overseas and latterly in Streatham Hill, London, where he died in 1833, James Leng was clearly interested in his Aberdeenshire property and its environs. When the old parish church of Crimond, originally built in 1576, was replaced, Dr. Leng donated his curious clock. The mechanism of the clock was regulated by a pendulum, a design invented by the Dutch philosopher and mathematician Christian Huygens in 1657. The error lay in the clock face. It had been painted with 61 minutes. Dr. Leng, perhaps because of his life in sunnier climes, seems to have been tickled by this and did not ask the clockmakers, John Moore and Sons of Clerkenwell, London, to rectify the error. We can imagine the puzzlement of the London horologists as one of their number was sent to Haddo of Rattray to adjust the mechanism in order to cope with the odd number of minutes on the face. The clock was duly installed at the church, leaving a blank space on the mansion house's wall, which is still there today. Zygmunt Krukowski, a Polish former soldier having settled in the village after the war, seems to have had a comprehensive knowledge of clockworkings. He thought he would repair this error by first regulating the pendulum's swing by adding old pennies as weights, then repainted the clock face to remove the offending extra stroke. The Crimond folk were livid. They loved their curious clock and their unique time zone. But what did this incomer think he was doing? Dr. Leng had given them the clock with 61 minutes and they would brook no argument. So, poor Krukowski, thinking he'd been doing his new neighbours a favour, had to undo his good works. The black clock, with its rather apocalyptic motto, "The Hour's Coming," spelled out in gold text, remains in the spire. There are 2 possible origins for the quote, both in the Gospel of John. In chapter 4, verse 23, "But the hour cometh and now is, when the true worshippers shall worship the Father in spirit and in truth, for the Father seeketh such to worship him." And in the following chapter, at verse 25, "Verily, verily, I say unto you, the hour is coming and now is, when the dead shall hear the voice of the Son of God, and they that hear shall live." Which one Dr. Leng meant, we may never know, but it does seem a far more appropriate motto for a church clock than a laird's one. The clock has been powered by electricity since 1994. Church elder and local councillor, the late Norman Cowie OBE, raised funds for the new mechanism. The old mechanism is still in the church and you can see it if you're there. At Crimond, the hour is indeed coming, but since 1812, just a minute later than everywhere else in Buchan. And the clock is still there, still working as far as I know. Now, we go on to a story about Crimond Airfield. How a duck helped the war effort. HMS Merganser, named after a rather fetching aquatic bird, was actually Crimond Airfield, commissioned October 3rd, 1944, by the Admiralty as a Fleet Air Arm training base. The site, now home to a popular stock car racing circuit and the Royal Naval Wireless Telegraphy Station, is neatly slotted between belts of trees near the Crimond Road and the Loch of Strathbeg. The airfield had previously been home to Mains and West Hill Farms, but from 1943 the land was commandeered by the Royal Navy and occupied by 714 Naval Air Squadron a few weeks after the devastating raid over Aberdeen, which had killed 98 civilians and wiped out large swathes of the city. And of course the anniversary of that was just on Tuesday there. The men received torpedo bomber reconnaissance training under Lieutenant Commander J.R. Godley, hunting down planes such as those which the Japanese used to attack Pearl Harbor. 774 Squadron arrived in July 44 to provide telegraphist air gunner training, later joined by 717 for the same purpose. Such units had been first introduced in the military in 1922, providing Morse communications while also manning the rear gun, a potentially deadly occupation. 495 out of the 3,000 tags died throughout the branch's history. HMS Merganser also hosted 753 Squadron, which arrived for observer training early in 1945 and remained until the following year. All units trained with a Fairey Barracuda, an all-metal British dive bomber, which was as ugly as its pesky namesake and very difficult to fly. One design flaw caused leaks of hydraulic fluid into the cockpit. The fluid's main component was ethoxyethane, better known as diethyl ether, a traditional anaesthetic. Thus, pilots fell unconscious and many accidental crashes occurred as a result. There were four recorded at Crimond. Sometimes nature was responsible. Sub-Lieutenant Derek Allen, stationed at HMS Merganser, was killed along with two colleagues when his Barracuda hit Colvane in Sutherland, the hill being obscured by mist. The buildings remained to give some idea of the site's extent. The hangars housed the planes, the tarmac runways leading from them are still in evidence. There were fusing sheds, in which musicians were armed. Torpedoes and their fuses were stored separately to avoid fatalities. Firing butts had the equivalent purpose of a rifle or gun range. Walk inside one and you'll find a low concrete beam which protected the trainees from ricocheting bullets. A water supply tank by a belt of trees catches only rainwater in the present, but would have been vital to operations. The control tower, rather squat by civil aviation standards, stands doorless and windowless, facing towards the runways now dominated by giant transmitter masts, which were once operated by 81 Signals Unit at Kinloss. Sited near the airfield were two camps, Keyhead and Moss Side, where the crews were billeted during their training. Moss Side also housed a military hospital, and many of its buildings are still to be found behind Crimond Village. By September 1946, the duck had flown and the airfield lay silent. So, those are two stories from the Shire about Crimond. And of course, you can still go on to Crimond Airfield. It's actually safe enough because the telegraphy station is completely fenced off and it's absolutely fascinating. Obviously, during the current situation, the lockdown, you wouldn't be able to go there, but definitely worth a look. So, for today, from the History Quine, goodbye.